Good morning and welcome to another episode of Dare to Think. Ooh, well, I have something very sad happening to me right now. Probably in the, course of human things, this is probably not the worst thing happening, but nevertheless, it's kind of sad. I bought a new book, which I was reading and was like really excited about, and I lost it. I lost a book. I don't know, there's something really sad about losing a book. It's like, especially a book that you like actually want to read, because that's unique enough, you know? That's something that happens enough that when it does happen, it's kind of like, wow, I didn't expect it to go that way. And it was really good. I'm probably going to buy it again, even though it's going to hurt. But I really want to read it, so I will buy it again and give it another chance. And, you know, I'm still hoping to find it, but it's probably very unlikely that I will. And gave me this sense of sorrow, like, oh my God, it's like lost knowledge, it's a lost opportunity. And, you know, I got the gist of it, which is good, but the analysis was so good. It was called Why Nations Fail, and I was loving that book, and knowing that I'm not going to be able to read it. O sea, se siente un poco como que no terminé de jugar el juego que más me gusta. Un poco. Y a ver, tengo otras cosas que leer. Evidentemente, agarraré otro libro y me lo leeré, pero se siente un poco mal. Pero bueno. El otro día tuve una experiencia muy interesante. Y la voy a conectar con esto, precisamente lo que estaba hablando de perder un libro. My favorite class ended today. So I'm also in this moment where it's like things are starting to draw to a close. We're approaching the summer and things are ending in the sense that, you know, university is ending and work is ending and other things are beginning. I got my assignment for camp this week. So the summer's plans are starting to actually take shape. But it feels weirdly like a sad feeling for some reason. I'm also kind of tired. You know, I've been working the entire year and studying the entire year, and a lot of things have changed, and it feels like I need a break. Like I need 10 minutes for myself. And I still don't want to slow down at the same time. I want to be able to do everything. And it leads to a bit of an exasperation. And I'm going to try to explain myself as well as I can. There's something particularly sad about knowing that you promised yourself to do something and that it's really hard to be able to fulfill that promise, that you want to give up, but you don't. My favorite class, like I said, had my last class today from that teacher. Told him a lot that I really liked the class. And yesterday we had a lecture with an invited guest. She's a Finnish diplomat. She is an advisor for her government. And she came and she started talking to us about the situation in Finland, which is eerily worrying. You know, I was in there. Estamos en, y nos estaba contando como Finland has a 1,340 kilometer border with Russia. You know, and they've had their neutrality as like their, you know, the backbone of their international public policy for a very long time, and in part it had to do, you know, with the political history, and she told us a lot about that, how they've only had two presidents during that long period of neutrality, and that is starting to change. And that she told us something really important, which is like, you can tell someone the data. You can tell them the gist. You can go and say this, and that. And it works, you know, it's informative. But it's funny because she started by talking about asking us sorry, she started by asking us about what we knew about Finland. And we didn't really know much. We knew the basic things that you might know. We had a lot of, you know, preconceptions and all that. And the first thing she told us is that most people that live in Finland, I'm talking all men and 3/4 of women or 2/3 of women, go to the army. They have the largest standing army in the world. It's something like they're 5 million citizens and 800,000, almost a million of them are part of the army, like at the standing army. It's a lot. It's in population standards, it's, you know, it's very big. And she started telling us about how this is, there's a culture there of that, you know, that it's something that happened because Russia during the Cold War tried to invade them, and they realized that, you know, the only way that we're ever going to be safe is to, you know, have a standing army, because we have Russia on top of us. And the other thing that they did was create this policy of neutrality, where they didn't stop negotiating with the USSR or Russia after the whole fiasco and with the United States, the Cold War, etc. They kept on talking to them. She also told us about, you know, the Nordic alliance that was like the freedom of mobility of Europe, but way earlier with the Nordic countries, and how, you know, the language barrier is also something really weird, because if you speak Finnish or if you speak Dutch or if you speak German or Russian, you know, she speaks Russian, she speaks like a lot of languages, and she's told us about how it has allowed her to see things from very different perspectives. And you can see that this is a person who trusts her own judgment very much, and who is very self-aware. I'm watching Grey's Anatomy right now, rewatching it, of course, and she reminds me of Dr. Bailey, not in any physical way, but in the way that you know that Dr. Bailey's always like this person who knows exactly how things should go. For those of you who haven't seen Grey's Anatomy, if you've seen Avatar: The Last Airbender, it's like Uncle Iroh, who he kind of knows what's going on, and he's like very wise and, you know, has some kind of insight. And yeah, and she gave me this kind of feeling. And what was remarkable about her when she was talking to us is you could see that the situation was scary to her. I'll explain why. With the Ukrainian war, one of the things that Russia is like very, very protective of is that the countries that have a border with Russia don't join NATO. Que no entren en la OTAN porque implica que tienes al enemigo en tu frontera, ¿no? Por lo menos desde la perspectiva rusa. And of course, after the Ukrainian war, since it didn't end really quickly, you know, and the people of Finland have been attacked before by Russia, and Russia has, and Finland has, you know, Finland was part of like Tsarist Russia. They gained their independence with the fall of the Tsars and the beginning of the revolutions in 1917. And so there's this problem of like, if you're starting to have expansion, if Putin is starting to have an expansionist vein and he wants to invade other countries, Finland's on the top of the list. Even though they speak very frequently, you know, even though the diplomatic ties between Russia and Finland are strong, they're not as strong as Putin's, you know, ego. Let's put it that way, even though that's a simplified argument. And so the president of Finland decided to meet with Joe Biden and, you know, write the letter to join NATO. And the sorrow in this woman's face, not really, because they don't, like, it's not something specifically about NATO. It's more than that. And that's what I saw. She has students. She teaches a class, and what she says is, for the last couple of months, I've had to stop working at one of the colleges I work at. And I have become a consultant in many different ways, and have moved around a lot. And one of the things that's going on that is very scary for me is that my students are scared. They've been scared since Russia invaded, because if Russia ever goes into Finland and invades Finland, they're going to be the ones who are going to be asked to fight. And it's scary because all of them, or most of them, are young men and women who have been to the military and their country has taught them to fight. And so they have an obligation to fight. None of them want to, or at least most of them don't want to have to lay their lives to fight, but it's there. It's hanging in the air. It's from the way that I could sense her, she was clearly salivating the idea and finding it very, very distasteful. But what made me more sensitive about this was that she started to tear up. She didn't cry. And she told us, "I promised myself that I wouldn't cry, not here, not at home. Because if I cry, they'll know I cry. And if I panic, they panic. And if they panic, everybody panics. So I can't break." And I just found myself admiring this woman and saying, "You are the bravest human being alive." Right before her presentation, she got a call from the president of Finland. This woman is important. And she took the time to think and empathize about the feelings that her students might have, and chose to keep hers under wraps, just not to hurt them, to give them more panic. Then it gets a bit worse, because you realize you retire from the army when you're 63. That's what she told us. And this woman, she's in her 30s. She's going to have to fight too. She's bearing all of that too. She has all that weight on her shoulders too. That's the moment that it dawned on me that this person was truly remarkable. What I found very interesting from the presentation is how she managed to explain the decision of the parliament of Finland. When the president says that he wants to join NATO, it's like a decision has been made. It has to pass through parliament. But the people of Finland believe in democracy in a different way than we do. And it's something like, "We chose you. You will know more than us about many things that are happening around us, and we trust you to make the right decisions." And he chose to join NATO. And so in the parliament, the votes went something like 188-4 in favor of joining NATO. Even though most of the people don't want it, even though most of the people in the parliament don't want it, nobody is going around saying that the president's a fool. Nobody's going around saying that they're not going to do it. They understand that they chose the president and that this is the path that he has chosen and that they chose him. And so it's something that they have to do.
Me recuerdo mucho a cuando un grupo de amigos hace algo malo y me atravesó en el colegio y pagan todos juntos por pecadores. O sea, no es que uno va y dice quién lo hizo, todos pagan juntos.
Feels kind of like that, like a compatriotism that is like synonymous in the population. It's just there. You don't need to talk about it. And before I left, I always have some kind of candy on me. And before I left, I asked her if she liked chocolate, and I gave her a Hershey's bar and thanked her for her honesty, for her bravery. I remember feeling empathic with her, because I felt I'm preparing myself to be that kind of person, the kind of person that would do everything that she's doing. And maybe not exactly the way that she's doing it, but there's something incredibly admirable about all of the work that she is doing.
And it just marked me. My book is something that I left without noticing. And, you know, I've lost it probably forever. But I decided to read that book. And I have an obligation not to leave that story in the middle. I also have an obligation not to give up on the work that I've been doing for a year just because I'm tired. And for the past few days, whenever I felt like I don't want to do something, I've just thought of that woman and got up and done whatever I have to do. So without further, I dare to think about what other people are doing and dare to think about how much you could do. Thank you, and see you next week.